Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Joe and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Last week we joked about how I made it here with 85 seconds to spare.
I think this was like 5 seconds to spare.
Like 8.5.
Yeah.
There's probably no cutting it closer.
I know.
To be fair, I was in the building.
Yes.
But, yeah.
You were in the building.
Time management's still an issue.
It is. I was sitting here waiting patiently, and you zoom in.
I pulled into the driveway before you did.
You did, but I walk faster than you do.
All right. That voice. Did I mention consumerguide.com? Check us out. Check us out at consumerguide.com. All the stuff is there.
All the stuff.
All right. That voice is Jill Simonillo, Managing Editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Contributing editor at consumerguide.com.
Yes.
We have an article you wrote. We'll talk about it later. Freelancer.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. So I feel like there are some people out there who would like a running update from me. And I just want to say I had a stress fracture in my foot at the beginning of May.
Who wants this?
I think JP was requesting it, and I believe Matt.
JP, hype super fan JP.
Yeah.
I think he was kidding.
No, he was not kidding. He wants the running update. So, stress fracture in early May. I've been recovering. I woke up. I was in New York for a thing that we're going to be talking about later. And I woke up in New York on Thursday last week, and my foot didn't hurt at all. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go for a walk, and I'm going to insert a little 1K run. So I ran 1K, no pain, and I did 2K again today, and no pain. So I'm back. We can commence the running talk.
Great.
I can tell you're super excited about
that. Yeah, no, running. It's top of the things I care about in life.
It is.
As long as we're not on topic, someone left us a 1-star review because we were not respectful to Sweden.
Oh, oops.
I kid you not.
Lo siento. Oh, and by the way.
They missed the part where I said I loved Saab, apparently.
Apparently.
And owned Saab.
As soon as you were not respectful of Sweden, they tuned out? I don't know.
They said they unsubscribed.
Oh, that's very sad.
It is.
We are very sorry.
Did I not mention I love Saab?
I love Sweden. I've been to Sweden.
I have not.
I have. I actually really like it.
All right.
So sorry about that. Also, I found out that
he said not to apologize and not to pretend like we were kidding.
I think we were kidding.
I know we were kidding.
Okay.
Also, people who say they're going to stop listening always listen.
Maybe.
We just made this guy's day by mentioning.
It could be.
Yeah.
But I also want to say on... it's not Threads, on Blue Sky. I think it's Blue Sky.
Heard of it.
Someone told me that Ni Hao, as I was talking last week and I kept saying that was hi, Chinese, Mandarin.
It's grape soda.
Ni Hao.
Oh.
But that Ni Hai is the grape soda. So that is in Mandarin, and then Konnichiwa is Japanese.
Okay.
So just want to give that correction.
All right.
Kind of on top.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Lot going on in the world of cars.
Yes.
One funny story, two interesting stories. I have complained to you that Tesla needs new product.
Okay.
Right? The S and the X are kind of useless. No one buys them. They're just taking up space in a plant. And the 3 and the Y are their volume cars. Mm-hmm. They are coming out with a new version of the Y for China.
Okay.
Called the YL. Maybe that's what it's called. I think this is all rumors. It hasn't been confirmed yet. But the YL, L is a long Y. It is going to have a third row.
And it will replace the X?
Probably. I think they did stop exporting the S and the X to China anyway. Those come out of Fremont, California. I think that's the only place where they build them. So, yes, it's totally replacing the X in China.
Okay.
We'll see if that helps them there. Model Y in Canada, interesting story. With the tariffs, they had to raise the price of with the reciprocal tariffs that Canada placed on U.S. products, they had to raise prices in Canada. Tesla suddenly chopped the price of the Y, probably because they're now importing cars from China to Canada. Weird, weird world.
Yes.
So that's interesting. The Nissan Kicks Play. Do you remember what this is?
No.
The Nissan Kicks Play is the old Kicks still being sold at Nissan dealerships alongside the redesigned Kicks.
So kind of like the old classic 1500 from Ram.
Exactly the
Got
same
it.
Thing.
Okay.
And Nissan has done this in the past before. They did that with the Rogue Sport for a little while. Anyway, that vehicle's probably going away. It's a tariff thing.
Okay.
So it was there. It was a little bit cheaper than the new Kicks. It's on lots. It just looks like the old Kicks, except they taped on the word play.
they use super glue and just...
I don't know how they did it. I have never seen a Kicks Play that I know of.
Okay.
But I don't know how I'd know.
Well, by the little super glued play on the back.
Yeah, I'd have to find that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's a funny story. Funny China story. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Chinese maker NIO, N-I-O, NIO.
Okay.
Pretty big, pretty successful maker of EVs in China.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of the leading proponents globally and certainly in China of battery swapping. And for people who don't know what that is, instead of charging your battery, you pull into something like a Jiffy Lube, and in less than 5 minutes, unless there's a line, they simply replace your depleted battery with a charged battery for a fee. NIO was doing this, I think, for free or for very cheap for a lot of people, or three or five years, something like that.
Okay.
If you had a car that had the battery that could be swapped. There's a lot of reasons why this would never work in the U.S., but they have a lot of vehicles there with the same batteries.
Okay.
Which is part of why this works. Well, NIO, like Tesla used to give free charging to everybody, was giving people free battery swapping when they bought their new NIO. Here's the problem with that.
Everybody did it?
Not only did everyone did it, they did it for things that had nothing to do with charging their car. There were people literally going to charge their car and using it to power their home. So, NIO was paying for their electricity.
Well, you know, as they should.
And also people were swapping them into other people's cars that didn't qualify and stuff like that. So, the free charging's going away.
This is why we can't have nice things.
It is. And somehow, in some way, Chinese business and Chinese marketing feels a little young and naive.
Okay.
That they thought that this was going to work for free like that. Like no American manufacturer or retailer wouldn't assume they were going to be scammed. and have protections in place. But there's something trusting about this that just disappeared. It's as if NIO lost their innocence.
So that went away.
Yeah, that's not good. Did you hear about the Toyota Flex line?
Yes, I did.
We have to talk to Kurt McAllister, our friend at Toyota, about this because I'd like to have someone
it's
on the show
really
to talk
cool.
about it.
I agree.
Georgetown, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big Toyota factory. Employs lots of people. Just got a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for here? Flexible, I guess is the word.
Flex plant flexible.
But modifications to the assembly line allow them to produce multiple models on the same line with different drivetrains. And
yep.
I think that includes on the right product, even EVs on the same line.
I think you are correct.
So super cool. And this allows them, the Chinese generally, and Toyota specifically, we're always involved in like just-in-time manufacturing. There's no warehousing. Things just go where they're supposed to go right away. So having to build things at different factories is a complexity they probably don't want. So if they can suddenly just build everything everywhere, and we're a long way from that. But if it didn't matter what factory you used, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That just makes things easier.
A lot easier.
And cheaper.
Yeah.
And cooler.
And to be clear, Toyota is not Chinese.
Did I say Chinese?
Well, you said the Chinese have always been...
Oh, I meant Japanese. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Just-in-time manufacturing is very much a Japanese tenet. Yeah, I'm sorry. I did not mean to say Chinese.
Okay. I'm like, just
My
to
bad.
Be clear.
Thank you for fixing that. So, you and I had a chance to drive the same vehicle.
We did.
The Subaru Forester.
Yes.
For 2025.
Yes.
Gets a hybrid.
Yes.
A much-needed hybrid.
And a really damn good hybrid.
Yes, it's exceptional. I agree with you completely. The profanity I don't agree with, but it is
You've
a fine...
You've said worse on air.
I have not.
You have?
It's a fine vehicle. And not only that, it is surprisingly good, given the fact that they went to Toyota for help.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of story there, but why don't you tell us about this vehicle?
Yeah, so I actually had it for a weekend that I was driving down to Indianapolis. So, surprise, I did a road trip, range trip, a range test.
So, again, that's 200 miles each way.
Yeah, so about 400 miles.
Good run.
And I wanted to see what my fuel economy would be going the speed limit. Because I feel like a lot...
A thing that's new to you.
Well, no, I feel like a lot of these range estimates are based on 55 miles an hour. And so when you don't get it, people are very disappointed. And I will say lately, in a lot of hybrids that I've driven, I've gotten at least 10 mpg less than what the EPA estimates you should get.
Okay, there's a lot of story here. Go ahead.
That did not happen in the Subaru Forester Hybrid.
You hit the EPA numbers.
I hit the EPA numbers going 70 to 75 miles per hour for like nearly 400 miles.
Here's an interesting thing about it. That so that's good. It's hitting its EPA numbers. Here's the bad thing about that.
Okay.
Its EPA numbers are very low relative to other hybrids.
Yeah, but they're honest.
Well, that's not the only thing going on here.
Yeah.
So we could talk about how good this vehicle is in a moment, but there's an interesting mechanical thing. If you feared for any reason that Subaru would abandon its all-wheel drive roots with this vehicle and go with some sort of hybrid all-wheel drive setup, they did not.
No.
So they turned to Toyota, who's a business partner. Toyota owns part of Subaru, a small part. I think it's 5%.
I thought it was like 20%.
I don't think it's 20.
Okay.
But a relatively small chunk. Yeah. And Toyota supplied them with hybrid technology.
Okay.
But they still use the old Subaru Boxster engine, the flat four. And they still use, and this is part of the reason that the fuel economy is not as good as, say, the RAV4. They use Subaru's tried and true symmetrical all-wheel drive system. So it is a mechanical all-wheel drive system, whereas the RAV4 actually just slaps a motor on the back axle. So it's a front-wheel drive vehicle. For all-wheel drive, they throw a motor in the back, and that's also how they get their hybrid.
Right.
So, different things. The combined EPA numbers for the RAV4 hybrid are 39. For the Forester, they're 35. So, you lose 4 mpg going Forester. I did see that mileage, too. Actually, the combined's 35, and I saw about 36.
Yeah.
In routine driving. I just got out of that vehicle.
Yeah.
But that is a really good hybrid setup.
It is.
And I would dare even an auto journalist to drive this and know it was a hybrid.
Yeah. I mean, it was seamless. It was smooth. It was quiet. It was peppy in the right places. It was comfortable. So you know, 2 hours or 3 hours in the driver's seat, and it was comfortable. I will say there were two little things that I would say were pain points for me personally. And one, I mean, this is going to surprise nobody at all. The wireless charger didn't work. And then my mom. So my mom has some mobility issues. And I, thought she would be able to get in and out of the vehicle with no problems. But she actually had a problem because of where the grab handle was located. It's like up in the roof rather than on the A-pillar. And so she had a really hard time pulling herself into the vehicle, and actually had to bring out a step for her to get in and out. And so, like, if you have someone in your life who has some mobility issues, it could be a little tricky, and that was unexpected.
I had no issues with this vehicle whatsoever. I was disappointed in the sound system, and I forgot what brand it was.
Yeah.
Didn't deserve the branding, but okay. Whatever. But whatever, it's fine. It's a fine sound system, but it's not a branded good system. One of the common knocks on any Subaru product that isn't turbo is that it doesn't have that much power. Kind of fixed here.
Yeah.
The horsepower number only jumps, I think, from, I didn't write this down, but I think from 180 to 194. I think that's the horsepower leap when you go to the hybrid. But that's good electric download torque.
Yeah.
It feels quick around town.
Yeah.
And it fixes something that I think would be on your list of things that irritate you. The stop-start system.
I was going to say auto stop-start.
Is imperceptible.
Yeah.
So that's good news.
Because it's a hybrid, and it just, like, you can move in electric only.
There's a reason, part of the reason for this is that in a hybrid vehicle, and especially in the old General Motors belt-assisted systems, you're applying some torque to the crankshaft when it's starting.
Mm-hmm.
And that torque kind of pulls on the crank and prevents it from vibrating.
Yeah.
So you don't get that startup vibration.
C-c-c-c-c-c.
Yeah. So old hybrids used to have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. And Subarus with the bigger engine, this one, the 2.5 liter four, cranky.
Yeah.
Like it was not a good stop-start system. Now it's flawless.
Yeah.
In the hybrid vehicles.
Yeah.
So interesting thing here, the price of entry is not low.
No.
The cheapest non-hybrid Forester is about $31,000. The cheapest premium, I'm sorry, hybrid is 38. That's because you have to go up a trim level.
Yeah.
And still pay about $3,800. That's just
38,000.
No. $3,800 is about the cost of going hybrid.
Okay.
If you compare premium to premium.
Okay.
So the vehicle we drove, you don't have to buy the Touring.
No, you don't. But you probably want the Touring.
But you might want it. 43.6.
Yeah.
So a bunch of money.
Yeah.
That gets you the not great premium sound system, but it gets you everything else.
But how does that compare to the RAV4 Prime? I feel like it's on par with or less than.
Prime is the plug-in.
Yeah.
Which this isn't
fair,
the plug-in.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well, the RAV4.
Did I write
hybrid.
That down? I didn't. That seems like an obvious question. I don't know where this is price-wise to where the RAV4 kicks in for a hybrid.
Okay.
But people buy lots of them, so it must be a reasonable price.
Yeah.
But still, I got 35, 36 miles per gallon. Ride and handling are great. I'm so sick of keeping track of safety systems now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the Subaru is a little bit aggressive.
And in fact, on the Subaru primer, they put together a little sheet for us, the reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced EyeSight Driver Assist Technology Standard. So even they've given up.
Yeah.
It has safety stuff, Jill.
It has safety stuff, but it's also like very beep happy. I turn some of that stuff off.
Oh, yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
A little bit.
Eyes off the road. I'm like, no, I'm just checking my blind spots.
That is a Toyota Lexus complaint for me.
Yeah.
It seems like you cannot leave the car without somehow pissing the car off. Like something you did. It's going to tell you that your keys aren't in your pocket, your child is dying in the back seat, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my kid never died in the backseat.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah, but a lot of beeping.
Burp, 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 burp.
Yeah. We should talk about autumn green metallic, one of the nicest colors I've seen this year. It's autumn green sounds like it would be this deep, rich color, but it is a lighter,
it's
more translucent.
It's kind of like a mossy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And it's very lovely. Iridescent.
Yeah.
It's a great color. It looks like a premium cost color. It's not. So there you have it. But this vehicle is on sale now. It's a 2025 model. Mm-hmm. I dig it.
Yes.
I dig it. This is a very nice addition to the Subaru line.
I concur with that statement.
Interestingly, Toyota helped Mazda build the CX-50 hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
But that one just gets a whole Mazda drivetrain.
Yeah.
That's very different. But that also was an excellent execution. So Toyota out there doing the Lord's work.
Yes.
Hybridizing the world.
Hybridizing all the things.
Oh, man. Did I cut you off? Anything you wanted to say about this fine vehicle?
No, I really liked it. I thought the infotainment worked really well. I like the wireless Apple CarPlay. I like the large screen. The climate controls at the bottom of the screen don't bother me. So, you know, there are some hard touch controls, but most of the controls are in the screen. Didn't bother me.
I may not love that screen. It's fine, but it's horizontal orientation. I'm sorry, vertical orientation. A little weird to me.
Okay.
Well, it's like a junior RAM setup.
Yeah.
If you've driven
or
a RAM.
Volvo setup?
Yes, which
it
I don't love either.
Me.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
And if you own it, you'll get used to it.
Yeah.
But I think the icons are stacked a little bit dense towards the bottom of the screen. And then there's just a bunch of fussy stuff towards the top. And I can never remember where the home button is. And that's on me. There is a home button that's always there.
Right.
So that's on me. Also, and this is key, I had no problems with the Bluetooth system. None.
Okay, good.
None. Everything worked.
So I would say we give this car 2 thumbs up then.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, way up.
Yeah, in fact, my wife wants one.
Oh?
So actually, 2 cars we've driven this year,
we're
both seriously considering. One is a Forester Hybrid now, and one was the Toyota Crown Signia.
Okay.
Well, fabulous cars.
Yeah,
so it's nice to drive something that surprises you because it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's kind of good these days.
Those are really good.
But real good is good.
Yeah.
All right. We have a surprise after the first break. We're going to talk to Chris Fuel, Chrysler brand CEO.
Yes.
This is the 100th anniversary of Chrysler.
Yes.
The Chrysler brand.
Yes.
Not the Chrysler Corporation. We'll be talking specifically about Chrysler brand stuff. And there's very good reason for me to talk about the Cordoba.
Okay.
Actual legit history stuff.
Legit.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Chris Fuel of Chrysler.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
We Are Motor Driven is like your favorite garage conversation, just with mics. Honest car talk, wild opinions, and no gatekeeping. New episodes weekly, wherever you get your podcasts. Bring snacks and buckle up.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. And we're talking Chrysler today.
We are.
100 years of Chrysler.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. There are a few storied American brands that go back that far. Buick does, for example. And I think Chevy's getting real close and Ford's getting real close too. Or Ford, they might have crossed that line. I got to think about this.
I think they did.
Ford did.
Yeah.
Ford did. I think Chevy came along a little bit later. But Chrysler's an interesting brand for a bunch of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a premium brand. It was always a brand known for large cars. It was always a brand known for largely for some really interesting innovation over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So here to chat Chrysler with us on the 100th anniversary of the brand is Chris Fuel, Chrysler brand CEO. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jill. It's so great to be with you today.
We are excited to talk some Chrysler, and we're glad it was so hard to get you scheduled, and I know that's not your fault, and thank you for working with us on this.
Oh, you are so welcome. Yes, it's been a really busy summer as we've been celebrating 100 years of Chrysler.
Well, talk about that. How have you guys been celebrating?
Well, we kicked off our 100-year anniversary celebration at the New York Auto Show in April, even though it was a few months ahead of the actual anniversary, which officially was on June 6th. But at the New York Auto Show, it was a really good opportunity for us to showcase where Chrysler's been over the last 100 years. And we brought back the Chrysler 6, which was actually cool. Debuted at the New York Auto Show 100 years prior.
Wow.
And yep. And so it was really cool because Walter Chrysler himself lived in New York and had a hand in building the Chrysler building.
Yeah.
And the New York Auto Show was where he first debuted the Chrysler 6. And the one that we have remaining is the only one that is still in existence of the four prototypes that were produced at that time.
Oh, wow. That's very cool. And it's a running prototype.
It's a running prototype. So we followed up New York Auto Show with the media event that we did on June 4th at the Detroit Yacht Club on Belle Isle, where Walter Chrysler was a member back in the day. And we invited journalists out to actually take a peek at all of these amazing vehicles that we have produced over history. And the Chrysler 6 was one of the 12 historic vehicles that we let them drive around Belle Isle. So it does still drive. It's surprisingly comfortable, I have to say. I had the opportunity to drive it. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but it was incredible.
I'm just shocked that you let automotive journalists drive one of four.
Yeah.
I mean, good on you.
I wouldn't let me drive it.
It was very closely supervised. But we had the Chrysler 6. We had the original 55 300C.
Wow.
We had the Imperial, the New Yorker, the Atlantis concept that inspired the modern day 300. And we had several Pacificas on display, as well as our 100th anniversary special edition, and also our Halcyon concept vehicle.
Did you have the Airflow there?
The 1934?
Yes.
We had that one on display as well. And interestingly enough, I was just at the Carlisle Chrysler event a uh-huh. couple of weekends ago. And we had all of those historic vehicles on display at that event also. And what an amazing event. There were thousands of customer vehicles out there on display, and they are so proud of how well they take care of their vehicles. And it was just an incredible event.
So looking back at 100 years of Chrysler, I know no parent likes to pick a favorite child, but I'm wondering if you could pick like some of your favorite vehicles throughout Chrysler's history, if you could point to some things you really like.
That's why I mentioned the Airflow.
Yeah.
Personal favorite.
Yeah, the Airflow is really cool, and I think it's a bit of an undervalued and underrated vehicle because it brought so many incredible innovations and technologies to market. And it was probably ahead of its time because people weren't ready for that to be mainstreamed. But so the Airflow is near and dear to my heart. The 55 Chrysler 300,
heck
for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a banker's hot rod and really set the tone for what became the modern day muscle car. I love the turbine. We also had that at the event. Mm. And there are only four of those, I think, even remaining in the market. And I think Jay Leno owns two of them. So that tells you something. That the Hemi V8, you know, even though it's not a car, it's so iconic to Chrysler brand and that going into the original Firepower vehicle and eventually the 300. And of course, you know, near and dear to my heart now is the minivan. It's a category that we created 42 years ago. And the Pacifica has been the number one best-selling minivan for the last 3 years. And to date, we've sold over 15 million minivans since we created the segment.
So, Chris,
so super proud of all of that.
Let's talk a little bit about that. We're talking about these historic vehicles, and though the Airflow did not sell well, I think it changed what a lot of people think about design. It was also unibody, which was interesting, so kind of high tech. But the Chrysler brand then and the Chrysler brand now, is this about where you might expect the brand to be? Is Chrysler still a luxury brand? And what do you want it to be, say, 5 years from now?
Yeah, so as we have been doing our 100-year anniversary celebrations and in our roadshows, we spent a lot of time reflecting on all of the incredible innovations and iconic vehicles that have come out under the Chrysler brand over the last 100 years. But as you said, it's also been a really good opportunity for us to talk about what we think the next 100 years needs to look like. And I think we can all admit that over time, Chrysler has been near and dear to people's hearts as being, you know, a brand that has represented true American luxury. You know, the 300 for sure, the Pacifica, and prior to that, you know, Town and Country. But when I think about some of the incredible Chrysler products over the past and where we're going for the future, it's time for us to bring back new products and new segments that we haven't been in for a very long time. Like the SUV categories.
Okay.
You know, we used to have an Aspen back in the day that customers loved.
Drove it.
And so it's time for us to really get back into those segments. So I talked quite a bit about the new products that you can expect to come out from Chrysler. We've got a new large size crossover that's coming out in the next year, and that'll be quickly followed up with another midsize crossover. And as I've been talking about the Halcyon concept, which I think is a really beautiful representation of the future design language of Chrysler being really sleek and modern and aspirationally contemporary and upscale, it gives us a sort of nod to what a next generation car under the Chrysler brand might look like. And I get questions from customers and dealers all the time about whether it's going to be called the 300. And we're definitely keeping an open mind about potentially bringing the 300 back. And I'm also really excited about the fact that we are breathing new life into SRT. And I think it's an awesome opportunity for us to take a look at a performance version of a future Chrysler nameplate.
Chris, when you talk about Chrysler in the future and you talk about Chrysler as a luxury brand, are we talking more Buick luxury or more Cadillac luxury?
Well, that's a really good question. And how our customers have come to define Chrysler and this notion of American luxury, it's really going back to Walter P. Chrysler's original vision for the brand. And that is creating beautifully designed vehicles that are well engineered with a lot of really innovative features and technologies, all at an affordable price. And so where Cadillac has gone, you know, more upmarket than Chrysler, we still want to position Chrysler in that upper mainstream segment of the market, but in that more premium space that really reflects the value of the design, the materials, the technologies, and the features that customers have come to expect from Chrysler.
So moving forward, we understand the Pacifica now largely as a luxury minivan. It's certainly the most luxurious of the offerings now. Moving forward, is that still something that's part of the Chrysler lineup? Is a minivan still core and central to the brand?
Yes, we wear the badge proudly as being referred to as the minivan brand. As I mentioned, it's a segment that we created 42 years ago, and we are deeply committed to not just maintaining a minivan in the Chrysler portfolio, but in the future, disrupting the segment that we created 42 years ago. And Chrysler does play in that upper mainstream segment of the minivan segment itself. And we've won so many awards for the best and most luxurious interior, and it's something that customers have come to know about the Pacifica.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Most awarded minivan in the segment, number one in the segment, best luxury interior, and definitely we've also won the J.D. Power IQS and Quality Awards as well for this year. So I think you can see Chrysler is on our way back, and I'm really excited about the very bright future that the brand has with the new products that are coming, as well as a refresh for the new Pacifica that we'll be launching next year.
Okay, so new Pacifica coming next year, I got to ask, is Stow & Go staying?
Absolutely, Stow & Go is staying. This year, we celebrated 20 years of Stow & Go, if you can believe it. I mean, we are the only ones in the market and in the industry that offers Stow & Go. And it's something that we're really proud of. It's an exclusive to Chrysler. And so, yes, we will continue to offer Stow & Go in the Pacifica. And in our future products, we really reimagined what we thought Stow & Go could be, even in an SUV application. So you can see some really interesting executions for a redefined Stow & Go in those products too.
Well, I may or may not have at some point in my automotive career fit myself inside the Stow & Go. She
was stuck there for a week.
You and I have met in person before, and you're more petite than I am. So I could see you fitting into the Stow & Go bit.
Well, I fell short of actually closing the thing, because I was like, I cannot imagine that call to Chrysler to say, by the way, I had to get Jaws of Life out of the Stow & Go because I was trying to fit myself in it. So I did not, you know.
Which is a good story.
Well, 20 years later, it would be a good story, but not at the beginning. Yeah. But glad to hear it's coming back, because I think that is a great feature. I love the fact that you can just pop the seats down into the Stow & Go, or if the seats are up in place, you can store like things in there that nobody has to know is in the vehicle.
Yeah, for sure. And we also have a Pacifica concept that we're taking to the Overland Expo. So I don't know if that's an event that either of you attend, but you'll see a pretty interesting Stow & Go execution on that vehicle also.
So, Chris,
and we're doing a little market research to see how customers might like the idea of an Overland Pacifica.
Sounds like a great idea.
I was like car camping, and I see another Rebel Rally in the future with Chrysler Pacifica.
Absolutely.
So, much to the dismay of Jill and producer Randy, I do have to ask you about a particular car. This is the 100th anniversary of Chrysler.
I apologize in advance for this.
But it is also the 50th anniversary of the Cordoba. When it sounds like I'm joking, but I notice that you haven't done anything to celebrate that, but there is something here that's actually really important. And that's that the Cordoba was a benchmark vehicle in Chrysler's history because it was the first car that wasn't a large luxury car. They actually say that in the commercial. They called it the first small Chrysler, and it kind of changed everything. And I don't know. I know the Cordoba is not like a greeting card might do it, but I think we need to tip our hat to the Cordoba and Ricardo Montalban
and Corinthian leather.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up the Cordoba, because you're right. When it launched, it was not considered a large vehicle.
Right.
Certainly by today's standards, it would be considered a land yacht. But
yes.
But it really represented American luxury in the eyes of the American consumers.
And it sold like hotcakes. Like
it did.
It landed with Americans. Like it was the new Chrysler. It was crazy. And it was between oil embargoes and things were expensive and interest rates were high. And all of a sudden, this Chrysler that was still luxurious but kind of priced right was kind of cool, which is why I think you should bring back the Cordoba name.
And the end of that story is bring back the Cordoba name. Got it.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay. So when we it was just a couple of years ago, actually today I watched an interview with you, and I think it was some Detroit news station, but at the time you were talking about the electrification of Chrysler, and I think at the time the notion was that Chrysler would be the first Stellantis brand to go completely electric. Is that still something you guys are thinking about?
Well, obviously with the shift in consumer preferences and some of the local market regulations, we've since pivoted away from Chrysler going 100% electric. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, at the time when we were originally conceiving of an all-electric portfolio, the market and the regulatory requirements were in a completely different place than when they are right now. And so it really makes sense for us to go multi-energy. And so the first new products that you'll see launching from Chrysler will launch with ICE first, and then because of the platforms that they're based on, Stella Large and Stella Medium, we have the option to add a battery electric derivative, which will do should the local market customers want that powertrain offering in the local market.
And when you say local, you mean North America?
North America, yes.
Okay. And then real quick, has your product planning been impacted much or at all by tariff concerns?
Sure, it has. It's something that we're definitely planning around. As you know, the Pacifica is made at our Windsor assembly plant, and we've been producing Chrysler products there for 100 years as well. We had huge family day celebration in the middle of June, and it was so well attended and so much pride held by the employees at the Windsor Assembly Plant. Is just a really high quality plant for us, and we look forward to the next 100 years of building products there. But yes, we do get levied tariffs on every Pacifica that we import into the U.S. But you know what? Surprisingly, or maybe not so much, we have had really strong dealer orders for the Pacifica in the U.S., so much so that for the last couple of months, it's been our best order trends in over 2 years.
Oh, good. Congratulations.
And so the dealers are really getting behind Pacifica. The minivan segment is really strong in the U.S., up double digits. And I think a lot of people just really didn't think about minivans being that relevant, but they're so practical and great for those family road trips. And I've gotten emails and stories from so many customers and dealers with, you know, these Pacifica stories that really celebrate the milestone moments that really have made an impact on how consumers drive and take their road trip.
That's cool. Chris, we're running out of time here, but tell us what you're most excited about in Chrysler's future.
What I'm most excited about is transforming the entire Chrysler portfolio so that we have at least three, if not four, brand new products that we'll be launching before the end of the decade.
Excellent.
And positioning Chrysler to play in those critical SUV segments and car segments that really allow us to not only grow the brand for the next 100 years, but attract new customers to the brand that we haven't seen in a while because of the fact that we've been down to one nameplate for the last couple of years now.
Well, we're looking forward to the stuff.
So the future for Chrysler is really bright.
Well, good. That's good to hear. Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Tom and Joe. It was great to speak with you.
Yeah. That was Chris Fuel with Chrysler.
Yes.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of the Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit GreenSenseShow.com or listen to the Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Uwe. She's Helga.
And we are not making any more Swedish jokes. Because apparently we offended someone and we apologized.
That's bad market research. That was one person. One person who wrote in all caps. So,
okay, so then everybody else who wasn't offended needs to go on and give us 5-star reviews and tell us we're funny.
That would help.
It would totally help.
We've gotten 2 1-star reviews now. My feelings are a little hurt. Not a lot
hurt.
Wasn't
the other one about my voice, though?
No, that was only like a 3-star review. Okay. Or no, a 4-star. I think it was a 4-star review.
Okay.
So, yeah, they may have... I'm so good, it outbalanced their dislike for you.
Yeah, apparently.
We didn't get to it, but we were going to talk a little bit about the Subaru.
Yes.
Uncharted. We may have to hold on to that for next week, but Subaru has launched a new...
EV,
also based on a Toyota.
Based on the CHR Plus, and I was at the event in New York last week, which is where I got my run-in. And
yay,
300 miles of range, and I think it looks good. I posted the reveal video on TikTok, and I have to tell you, there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of hate for this vehicle.
Well, that's weird. The name's weird. You wrote a really nice write-up for that.
Yes.
For me, I've got that. I will share that in our show notes. Mm-hmm. By the way, people should follow us on Facebook, the Car Stuff Podcast on Facebook.
Yes.
That's where all our notes are, donut pictures.
Yes, there's going to be an unboxing video this week.
Yeah, which is exciting.
It's very, very exciting.
All right. One real quick thing about the Uncharted, uh-huh. And maybe we can talk more about it next week.
We don't know what the plural is?
Right. Oh, my God. Now I hate it. No, the reason they went with a front-wheel drive model, even though it's Subaru, is so they could hit that 300-mile range.
Got it. Yes, yeah. That makes sense.
Because they were like right under with all-wheel drive. Yeah. It was like 290 or something. It's still a relatively small battery.
Yes.
Like 75 kilowatt hours. Anyway. All right, you're on social media.
I am.
Last I checked.
So in addition to TikTok, which is where I try to post a new video every day, and I've got some stuff on the Uncharted there. I am on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. I do a lot of shorts there, long form videos. I post this podcast on there. I'm a little bit behind, but it will eventually get there. And Threads, Blue Sky. I'm on all the things.
You want to watch the videos because there's nothing like watching me sift through my notes.
Through your notes and like
I have
tapping
5 pages
pen
of notes. Yeah,
you've got cool pens. You should look at the pens.
This was my dad's pen.
See? Cool
pens.
Yeah,
I got this from my dad.
But at Jill Simonello, hashtag car du jour.
All right.
Yeah.
And I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter and X.
Awesome.
Well, Twitter and X and Blue Sky.
Yes.
Yeah, Twitter and X are the same thing. Yeah. All right, today's quiz, super predictable. You want to guess what the topic is?
No.
Was it a Chrysler?
Oh, okay. So you're actually kind of on topic today.
Yeah, the bonus question, I promise you, is not.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the bonus question,
always
which is always related to the topic of the day.
Yeah.
All right. What is June 6, 1925? Oh, that was the introduction of the Chrysler 6.
Oh, okay.
I have that up here as a note, but Chris covered that.
She did.
All right, I'm just going to give you 5 model names. You have to tell me if they were ever Chryslers.
Okay, is that for all 5 questions?
I've got 5 different, yes.
Okay.
5 different model names. Plus a bonus question. You need 3 for a win. Are you ready?
Yep. I'm eating my cinnamon donut while we do this.
Newport.
Okay.
Newport. Was Newport a Chrysler product?
I'm going to say yes.
It was a bunch of different eras, 40 through 41, 49 through 50, and then big sprawling 1961 to 1981. Fun thing about the Newport, Hal Linden, who played Barney Miller on Barney Miller, did commercials for the Newport.
Got it.
Interesting.
But did he mention Corinthian leather?
There is no Corinthian leather in the Newport. Also, the Newport was kind of junky.
Okay.
It was really attractive, but those cars stunk. Chrysler launched these. I think they were called the R-Body.
Okay.
Large cars for like 80 and 81.
Okay, well, that was a bad era for cars in any rate.
Yeah, and so. It was an especially bad era for these.
Okay.
They didn't sell well. Also, General Motors had downsized its cars hyper-successfully right mm-hmm. before this. They did better.
Okay.
Villager.
Yes.
No.
Oh!
No, the Villager was many things, but it was a Mercury van most recently that was built by Nissan. It was Mercury's version of the Nissan Quest.
I was thinking of the Voyager.
Yep.
Yeah.
No.
Darn it. Okay.
All right. You've got 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
The Conquest. It's kind of a trick question, but it's not. Was there a Chrysler model called Conquest?
I don't think so. I'm going to say no.
There was.
Ugh.
And it was a weird car. There was a Mitsubishi product called the Mitsubishi Starion, which was a really cool rear-wheel drive, turbocharged hot hatch. Not hot hatch. It was a coupe, very good-looking car. Kind of competed with the Camaro and Firebird at the time. It was sold as a Chrysler between 1987 and 1989, called Conquest, as a Plymouth before that, and as a Dodge before that. Very strange distribution of this Mitsubishi product in the American market.
What was the name of the minivan from Nissan?
Just minivan.
No.
Oh, from Nissan.
Yeah.
Nissan Quest.
Okay, I was thinking of that.
Yeah.
Conquest. Okay.
Yeah. So there you have it. You got that one wrong, right?
Yeah, I did.
All right, this is starting to get important.
Uh-oh.
Berlinetta.
I have no idea.
Berlinetta. So much I can tell you about the name Berlinetta.
Clearly. I looked at it. Producer Randy, he says no, so I'm going to go with no.
Yeah, no. I think most famously for Americans, Berlinetto was a luxury trim level on the Camaro.
Got it. Okay.
But it was
a bunch of
Ferraris, Alfas, Maseratis, and I can't read my writing. Also, when Tom Skilling, America's weatherman, moved to Chicago,
WGN,
when he was a young man, he drove a Chevy Berlinetta.
Okay.
A Camaro Berlinetta. So you got that one right.
Okay.
With help, right?
With help, yeah.
So does that give you two?
Yes, it gives me two.
Okay. You got one more question, and then the bonus question.
All right.
All right, you're kind of in trouble here.
I am in trouble.
Saratoga.
I won't look at Randy for help. I honestly don't know the answer to this.
How long has that been your portal to success?
No, usually isn't. Only usually when you talk about music. Then I look at Randy because he knows music. I have no clue on your
Randy music. Knows more about music than a lot of people.
Yeah.
More than me.
Saratoga. I'm going to say no.
Yes, it was. For a bunch of different model years. 39 for 42, 46 to 52, and 57 to 65. And I think it was always just a large car.
Okay.
There were probably wagon versions and coupe versions and stuff. All right. Burger King. You're familiar with Burger King?
Okay, yeah.
All right. How many Burger Kings do you think there are on the planet?
100,000.
That would be wrong. Luckily, that's not the question. There's about 19,000.
Okay.
19,000.
I don't know. It seems like there's a lot in Chicago. There's one on every corner.
And there's 6,638 in the U.S., to your point, and there's 17 in Bolivia.
Bolivia.
Mm-hmm. Which is where Butch and Sundance ran off to.
Okay.
That didn't end well.
Okay.
Have you ever watched Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
No.
Oh, man.
Are you talking about the Robert Redford one?
Yes.
No, I did not, but that was one of my dad's favorite movies.
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because it's an awesome movie.
Okay.
It's a very, very, very good movie. One of the best movies to come out of the late 60s, and it's it's certainly one of my top 20 favorite movies. 17 Bolivian Burger Kings. I checked their menu today.
Of course you did.
Which, by the way, Google Translate did a fabulous job on.
Okay.
So.
How do you know?
Because everything sort of made contextual sense.
But maybe it was just making stuff up.
It could, and I wouldn't know.
And you would not know.
Yeah. Turns out there isn't a Burger King in Bolivia.
Yeah.
No, there is.
Although there are 17 of them.
Grok told me there wasn't, by the way.
Well, Grok is...
Yeah. I need you to tell me which of the following... I don't know why we're just intentionally killing time here.
I don't know.
I need you to tell me which of the following is not a sandwich on the Burger King Bolivia menu.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're ready.
I'm
you're eating a donut,
donut.
Though. Mm-hmm. You didn't even mention what that was.
It's a cinnamon twist.
Okay.
I said I was eating my cinnamon donut.
Oh, all right. All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
The Long Rodeo. The Big Steak Kahuna. The Whopper Texan. And the Crunchy King Swiss. If my name was King Swiss, I would totally go by the nickname Crunchy.
All I have to say is I would like you to read these in Spanish now.
Yo, Crunchy. I don't even have Spanish in front of me.
Because then I could probably tell what the fake was.
Long Rodeo, Big Steak Kahuna, Whopper Texan, Crunchy King Swiss.
You laughed on the Crunchy King Swiss.
Crunchy just makes me laugh. Because I what would make a Swiss crunchy?
I don't know.
Yeah.
This donut is a little bit crunchy.
In a good way?
Sure.
Oh.
Okay, right.
So I need an answer.
Crunchy. Okay, so I think the Texan Whopper is real. I think the last one's real. What are the first two again?
The Long Rodeo,
mm-hmm.
which sounds like a terrible novel, or the Big Steak Kahuna.
I think the Big Steak Kahuna is fake.
It's fake.
Yes!
You saved your butt.
I saved the day.
All right. Last week I forgot to give you a signed copy of the quiz, but here you go.
Okay.
I know you treasure these.
I do. I will use it as a bookmark.
Yeah. So there you go. I'll have stories to tell, but I got into the Land Rover Defender 110 today.
Ooh,
in
okay.
X trim.
Okay.
Which, here's a weird thing about that. What's it? It's called X Dynamic. In their hierarchy of trim levels, X Dynamic is cheaper than the X. Doesn't the Dynamic feel like a modifier that would improve the vehicle?
It certainly has more words.
Yeah, right. More words equals more money mm-hmm. equals better everything. Seems like a very nice vehicle. By the way, good stereo.
Okay.
You and the industry lost a friend.
Yes.
Last week.
Yes.
We just wanted to mention Frank.
Yes. So longtime automotive journalist and political reporter. He started his career as a political reporter. Frank Okafor passed away last week. And he was, I want to say he was 93.
Wow.
And here is the tie-in to the show. I met Frank while on a drive program for the Chrysler Aspen.
Oh.
And he was my drive partner. And
was this the crazy drive from LA to Palm Springs?
No. I can't even. I don't think so.
Because that's
remember.
What I did for the Chrysler Aspen.
Okay, so maybe it was. Yeah. But I just was so enthralled and entertained by Frank and the stories that he told that I whatever craziness happened, like I don't remember it. I just remember.
Yeah,
like,
he could hold court at a dinner table. He would be, and you would be wise to listen.
Yeah, and you know he like we. I remember we got into talking about Facebook and like this was many years ago and why he should be on it and why it was important and social media and all that kind of stuff.
Those guys did not latch on,
but he did. He got
did
on
he?
After
okay.
we had the conversation, and then so I'm like, ooh, feeling really important talking about social media, and then he's like, yeah. So I was at the White House the day Nixon resigned, and I'm like, that would be more important. But we had such a great conversation, and he mentioned that he wrote a book. It's called Never a Slow Day, and it's a kind of a memoir of his life as a newspaper person.
Cool.
And I just wanted to read the very first, like, paragraph of the introduction of his book, and I'll be quick, because this is exactly why I decided to become a journalist, and I read this, and I was just like, yeah, So, the introduction. This is the story of a 20th century newspaper reporter. I was in it for the fun and the front row seat, and maybe the fame, if it happened, but never for money, because everybody knew that reporters were poorly paid. The attraction was that you could watch and participate in events and situations that other people envied, even to the point of paying for them, and at the same time make a living at a craft that was not only useful, but made a contribution to society. I considered it an honor and a privilege to spend my life, to spend my working life as a newspaper man. And that is right there why I got into journalism. And hearing Frank say that so, like, succinctly and beautifully.
Yeah. It's sad that the demise of the lifelong journalist
yeah
is kind of sad
yeah
because there really aren't the world doesn't reward them enough for people to go into that industry anymore.
Well, I mean, it was never for the money.
No, but there aren't even positions like that anymore. Most people are stringers and freelancers now.
True.
We have lost
the somebody who works for an actual newspaper.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think journalism is still a really great life. I've enjoyed my time, you know, meeting interesting people and reporting on cool things. And, you know, when he says never a slow day, you know, the idea is being that every day is different and that you get to do something cool and interesting every day.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah. And so cheers to Frank. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to know him. And, you know,
he had a favorite cocktail and I forgot what it was.
Oh, I don't know that.
I can't remember, but I clinked glasses with him a few times. So. We will miss Frank.
Super guy, and thank you for letting me say I miss him.
Absolutely. Real quick, all of a sudden, after a relatively slow July, I got a bunch of stuff coming up. I will be on WGN Radio tonight at 6:45 with someone who's filling in for John Hansen.
Okay.
But we will probably be talking about the new Subaru.
Okay.
Tomorrow, I don't know when this is going out, I'm going to be a guest on the Truth About Cars podcast with Tim Healy. Tim has been a guest on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, I am in studio with Steve and Johnny. It is Steve King's birthday.
Okay.
And I intend to celebrate again the 50th anniversary of the Cordoba.
Again. Are you going to bring your keychain?
I will tell you something about that next week.
Okay.
Actually, I don't think Steve and Johnny are going to listen to this before then. I bought Steve one.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? So, and I'm going to tell him that Ricardo Montalban touched it. And it's possible.
It is possible.
Also, if anyone else is looking for a Cordoba keychain, they're gone.
Because you bought them all.
eBay is officially bereft of the original bronze coin Cordoba keychains.
Got it.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
But I own them all. I now control. I control the market.
So, if you would like a Cordoba keychain, contact Tom Appel.
No, I'm not selling these. First of all, I'm giving one away.
I mean, you could $1 million. Would you sell it for $1 million?
Yes.
Okay. See, yeah. So there's a price.
I'd probably sell it for $50, but
$50 million?
No, $50.
Oh, got it. See, there's a price. There's a price.
That's because I'm a journalist.
Well, that's fair. No, nobody makes money as a journalist.
All right. Guess what we did?
We had a really great show today.
Fun show. Yeah. It was awesome talking to Chris Fuel. Fun. She's fun to chat with.
Yes.
And she has a very interesting job ahead of her because mm-hmm. change is coming at Chrysler,
mm-hmm.
and she will be deeply involved in that.
Yes.
So thanks to Chris Fuel of Chrysler. Thank you, Jill. Thanks to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.